You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
Employment disputes, whether involving individuals or trade unions, provide a sharp lens through which to view the society from which they arise. The way a country deals with industrial action, unfair labour practices, discrimination or so on, reflects the extent to which it is governed by the rule of law. The Labour Court in South Africa is a specialised branch of the High Court established after the democratic elections in that country to govern the often inflamed relationships between employers, workers and trades unions, in a country where people are plentiful and employment is very scarce. I'm here with Mr. Justice Steenkamp in his Cape Town chambers, overlooking a busy street in the city centre. Judge Steenkamp, thank you very much for agreeing to be on our podcast.
Thank you, Rosalind, and thank you for coming all the way from the UK to interview me.
So just a little bit of institutional background. The Labour Court is a rather different institution to the generalised High Court in the United Kingdom that we're familiar with. Could you give us a little bit of background here?
Yes. I hope not to lapse into Latin too often, but it is a sui generis institution. It is one of its kind. The Labour Court is on the same level as the High Court, and just for those of your listeners who may not be familiar with it, we have a system of magistrates' courts, then above that the High Court, then the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the apex court is, of course, the Constitutional Court. So the Labour Court was set up as a specialist court equivalent in stature to the High Court. Where it differs is that from the Labour Court, appeals go to another specialist court, which is the Labour Appeal Court. And then, of course, if the Constitutional Court does assume jurisdiction, the Constitutional Court will still have the ultimate say. As far as the lower tribunals are concerned, we have the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, the CCMA for short, which has mainly individual employment disputes, unfair dismissals, that type of thing, by way of, firstly, conciliation, and if that fails, by way of arbitration. And from there, the Labour Court has jurisdiction to hear reviews as opposed to appeals. So the aim of the legislature was to curtail lengthy disputes and to provide for a cheap and expeditious dispute resolution system at a lower level, and then to curtail disputes going further than that.
That gives us a good idea of your role, that it's review rather than going over the merits and the facts of the case afresh.
Yes.
Let's have a look at, obviously, the big first subject, which is industrial action. We have, all over the world, systems of protected strikes. Mm-hmm. In South Africa, this is particularly important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. As you said in your introduction, we have very high unemployment, which I think makes the whole concept of industrial action somewhat different here. Even though it's easy to go on strike procedurally, the costs are often great. And along with that, unfortunately, comes very high levels of violence. And that is, unfortunately, what we as judges are dealing with very often. To contextualise it, the Labour Relations Act has introduced, after 1994, the concept of a protected and an unprotected strike, as opposed to lawful and unlawful strikes. And to put the regulation in a nutshell, in order to go on what we call a protected strike, a union would have to give the employer 48 hours notice of its intention to go on strike, and it then quite simply can proceed to strike. The protection it then gets is against any disciplinary action for striking. So the strike itself is protected. Violent action during the strike, quite obviously, is not. But that doesn't, unfortunately, deter many union members from acting violently. In the context of high unemployment, it's very easy to recruit scabs. Of course, it's not called scabs in the Act, it's called replacement labour, but we all know what we're talking about. And the level of intimidation against replacement labour or scabs is unfortunately very high. That leads to a further problem in that employers then approach the court to interdict violent strikes. But even if an interdict is granted, it's very, very difficult to enforce. And one of the problems we have found is that even if the court grants an interdict, the police service often stands by, washing their hands because they say this is an employment dispute. And it has reached the point where employers now often ask the court to include in the interdict a mandamus, in other words, an order ordering the police to, quite frankly, do their job.
I've read in some of the cases, certainly, that on which you've given judgments, including the quite famous case that hit the international press, the case involving Robertson Winery and the strikes by the agricultural workers there, that not only were retaliations against replacement workers, but there was actual hate speech that rendered the actions of the strikers unlawful. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, that's quite interesting. Because in that case, the court granted an order, my colleague Edwin Tlotlomache granted an order restraining the union and its members from intimidating, harassing and threatening any employees or temporary labour, and in interdicting them from preventing access to vehicles and to people going in and out, and from carrying weapons. So one of the interesting and unusual aspects of that case was, although workers generally in South Africa, when they picket, they will sing and dance and what we call toy toy, which is a revolutionary dance. And in fact, the picketing rules, default picketing rules issued by the minister and normally implemented by the CCMA, specifically make provision for it that that is allowed. In this case, the strikers went a bit further. They chanted a song containing the words Dubula Renet. Translated into English, that translates to shoot Renet. And they were referring to one Renet Jordan, which was the winery's human resources manager.
So they were calling for a specific act of violence against a named person.
Exactly. Of course, that might sound shocking at first glance. The counsel for the union was arguing that it should be seen in the context of struggle songs dating back to the armed struggle before 94, before democracy, and that, in a sense, one can't take these things to heart. They are just songs. And I think someone said, there's nothing wrong with the song. So, as I said, it came to this court by way of contempt proceedings. And most of your listeners may well know that here, as in the UK, the hurdle for contempt is quite high. It has to be both willful and mala fide, or in bad faith. And the Labour Appeal Court here reiterated, and unfortunately I have to quote here again, so I don't do them a disservice, and they said, quote, "The time has come in our labour relations history that trade unions should be held accountable for the actions of their members. For too long, trade unions have glibly washed their hands of the violent actions of their members. This in a context where the Labour Relations Act, which has now been in existence for some 17 years, and of which trade unions, their office bearers, and their members are well aware, makes it extremely easy to go on a protected strike, as it should be, in a context where the right to strike is a constitutionally protected right. However, that right is not without limitation." So, in a case involving the University of Cape Town, in the context of the roads must fall and fees must fall protests, the court reminded us that protest action is not itself unlawful, and the right to freedom of speech is protected by the Constitution. But it then said the following: "Thus, the right to freedom of speech does not extend to the advocacy of hatred that is based on race or ethnicity and that constitutes incitement to cause harm. The right of demonstration is to be exercised peacefully and unarmed, and all rights are to be exercised in a manner that respects and protects the foundational value of human dignity of other people and the rights other people enjoy under the Constitution. So in that context, and given that guidance by the Supreme Court of Appeal, I found that the speech, in this instance, the song Kill Renette, went beyond the limits of free speech and beyond constitutional protection, and that the union was indeed in contempt of the court order.
And as far as I remember reading the relevant judgments about the fees must fall protests and the roads must fall protests on campus here in Cape Town, they also had a problem with the police standing by.
Exactly. Exactly. It's exactly the problem that we find in strike cases and picketing going beyond lawful picketing, I think, is a problem with protests generally.
And of course, even though you as a judge or whoever else on the bench has decides that the unions have reached the high bar of contempt of court, that is not going to get those individual perpetrators of violence out of the public arena.
Yes, exactly. At worst, some individuals who could clearly be identified might go to jail, quite frankly. But whether it has an effect on the broader problem, I have my doubts.
So you and the police need to do your job in concert rather than handing over to each other.
Exactly. And of course, that is the limit that courts face.
Whilst we're on this sadly relevant but nevertheless topical subject of hate speech, moving away from industrial action now to individuals arriving in your court, looking at discrimination. Obviously, when people think of South Africa, discrimination, the question of racial discrimination is one of the first things that comes to mind.
Yes.
But it doesn't always go in the expected direction, does it?
Sadly, 25 years after entering what we wished and hoped would really be a non-racial and non-sexist democracy, instances of racial discrimination still do exist, and often it comes to the fore in the workplace, most often by white racists uttering racist statements concerning black colleagues, and they are generally given short shrift. It is a one strike and you're out dismissal type of offence. But as you say, it doesn't always go one way. I recently had a very interesting case where a police officer of all people uttered some vitriolic and quite disgusting remarks on Facebook. And this person posted not on his own Facebook wall, but on that of the leader of a political party known as the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF. At this stage, a very small but very vocal political party that some of your listeners may be familiar with. They are renowned for wearing red overalls in Parliament to set themselves apart.
And their leader is Julius Malema,
exactly.
Who's playing not an insignificant part in the campaigning for the coming elections.
Exactly. But in this case, Warrant Officer Dakhane, who, as I say, was a member of the police force, posted on Julius Malema's Facebook wall the following words. And here I must apologize in advance for very injudicious language, but bear in mind that I'm quoting verbatim. "Fuck this white racist shit. We must introduce black apartheid. Whites have no room in our heart and mind. Viva Malema. When the black messiah dies, we'll teach whites some lesson. We'll commit a genocide on them. I hate whites." So far the quote. So rather unsurprisingly, the police service thought this was not someone that they would want in the police service of a non-racial democracy, and they booted him out. He nevertheless felt aggrieved, and he referred a dispute to the CCMA.
They presumably booted him out for racist speech, in other words, unlawful behaviour.
Yes. Exactly. And there happens to be a code of conduct in the police force that prohibits that kind of behaviour. At the CCMA, it went to arbitration, and again the arbitrator, who was a commissioner called Joyson Kopane, found against him, found that the dismissal was fair. He was still undeterred, and he then referred a dispute to this court on review. So just a short aside, the test on review is one of unreasonableness, and the Constitutional Court has clarified that to mean that a decision is reviewable if the conclusion reached by the arbitrator is so unreasonable that no other arbitrator could have come to the same conclusion, having regard to all the evidence. So I then had to consider not afresh whether I would have dismissed Mr. Lakhani, but whether the arbitrator's decision was reasonable, the arbitrator's decision in turn being that the decision of the police service to dismiss him was fair. I found that it was, and in my view, the arbitrator's decision that called for a fair dismissal was certainly not an unreasonable one.
Yes, and if you don't mind me quoting you, it's in the public domain anyway. You say in the conclusion of your judgment that the application for review of the arbitrator's and the employer's decision was totally without merit, and you ordered Dakhani to pay costs, and you said he had contributed to the scourge of racism and racial hatred that most unfortunately still persists amongst some individuals in our non-racial democracy. He has shown no remorse.
Yes.
Well, it's a very interesting landscape that you're describing to me, completely outside the walls of this cool and familiar-looking judge's chambers. There's tricky stuff going on out in the mines and in the fields where agricultural workers are toiling away under the hot sun. So thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me on this fascinating subject.
It's a great pleasure.
Only a few weeks after I recorded this interview, I was shocked to hear of the death of Mr. Justice Steenkamp by snakebite whilst on safari in Zambia. This is a tragic loss to the justice system of South Africa, where he was highly trusted and respected by friends and colleagues alike.